Welcome to today's reading of the Quad City Times for Tuesday, January 9th, 2024. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik, and here is our first story. Snow emergencies declared. Quad City area could receive up to 12 inches of snow. It's written by Sarah Watson. Area cities have declared snow emergencies ahead of a snowstorm expected to begin Monday night. By mid-afternoon on Monday, Davenport, Moline, and Rock Island had all set snow emergencies to start later Monday evening. Bettendorf is providing updates on its response on its website and Facebook page. The National Weather Service is forecasting a prolonged winter storm to drop between 6 and 15 inches of heavy, wet snow in the area starting Monday night and continuing into the early hours of Wednesday morning. The storm is expected to cause hazardous travel conditions, and local transportation and weather officials recommend avoiding travel during the storm. With warnings ahead, cities are prepping the roads and snow plows for the coming storm. Residents should park off-street, cities say, to allow snow plows to efficiently clear city streets, and on some posted snow routes, cars will be ticketed and towed if they continue to park on the street during a snow emergency. Davenport, Moline, and Rock Island have each declared snow emergencies as of mid-afternoon Monday. In Davenport, cars parked on posted snow routes will be ticketed and may be towed. See the city's website for all posted snow routes or look for the red and white signs that say no parking on streets when snow emergency is in effect. This especially reduces parking downtown, but drivers can park in the three downtown city park ramps for free during the snow emergency, according to the city. In Rock Island, vehicles parked on marked snow routes will receive a $35 parking ticket. See the city's website for a list of posted snow routes. Moline, too, will ticket and tow vehicles parked on a designated snow route, a map of which can be found online. Routes are marked with red, white, and blue signs that read Snow Route Tow-Away Zone. Most cities require sidewalks to be cleared after a certain period of time, after the deadline, which is typically between 12 and 48 hours after snowfall. Cities may clear the sidewalks and bill the property owner. In Bettendorf, the city may remove the snow or ice and bill the property owner after 48 hours of snowfall. In Davenport, the city begins enforcement of sidewalk snow removal policy 24 hours after snow stops falling. In Moline, owners must clear snow and ice from sidewalks within 12 hours after snow has fallen. Rock Island does not have a listed time requirement on its website. The city of Davenport last winter used about $625,000 in anti-icing materials, 7,660 tons of salt, and over 56,000 gallons of calcium chloride, according to Public Works Director Nicole Gleason. The city of Davenport typically treats major roads ahead of winter events with a 5% beet brine de-icing solution, which helps prevent ice and snow from sticking to the roadways and promotes faster melting. The city also purchases calcium chloride for colder temperatures. The city of Moline typically purchases around 4,000 tons of road salt each year, said Moline spokesperson Tori Brecht. This past fall, the city built a new brining facility that Brecht says is expected to get the city more miles out of its anti-icing materials. In Bettendorf, 12 routes are assigned to drivers who operate on 12-hour shifts. Per shift, each driver covers about 100 miles of plowing, according to Chris Hatfield, operations manager for Bettendorf Public Works. Applying anti-icing materials before a storm takes about 7,500 gallons of brine, which costs about $600 per application, she said. Hatfield said last winter the city applied anti-icing for 5 events. This storm is the first application for the winter season. See more information on each of the city's websites: Bettendorf, Davenport, Moline, Rock Island, Eldridge, and Silvis. Next is an article entitled, Iowa GOP Promised Tax Cuts. Dems Urged Stricter Gun Control Measures. This is written by Caleb McCullough, Aaron Murphy, and Tom Barton of the Lee Gazette Des Moines Bureau, and the dateline is Des Moines. Iowa's majority Republicans promised faster tax cuts and a continuation of their conservative agenda as they gaveled in for the first day of the 2024 legislative session on Monday. Republican and Democratic leaders made opening speeches laying out their priorities for the session, with many expressing their grief and calling for action after a deadly school shooting in Perry last week that left 11-year-old Amir Jalief dead and seven others injured. The shooter also died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Republican leaders in the House and Senate promised to accelerate income tax cuts they passed in 2022 and expanded business opportunities in the state. Iowa Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer, a Republican from Grimes, compared Iowa's policies and fiscal standing to those in neighboring Democratic-run state Minnesota and Illinois. And he highlighted Iowa's fiscal health, noting the $2.1 billion state general fund budget surplus, which is projected to grow to $3.1 billion in the next fiscal year, plus another $3.7 billion in the state's taxpayer relief fund. Whitfer reiterated the call to accelerate the recent income tax cuts and pledged to reduce the number of state boards and commissions, a process already underway after it was included in Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds' state government reorganization plan and studied by a legislative committee. The goal is to make government more efficient and help Iowans get to work faster, Whitfer said. In one sentence, here's the plan: cut taxes, control spending, reform government, and let Iowa be great. Let's get to work. Iowa Senate Minority Leader Pat Yoakam, a Democrat from Dubuque, described the principles that will guide Senate Democrats' work during the 2024 session. For every item that comes across our desk this session, we're going to ask three questions. Does it create more opportunity for Iowans? Does it ensure freedom for Iowans? Does it provide more accountability for Iowans? Yoakam said. If the answer is yes, Senate Democrats are ready to work with Republican colleagues to get it done. If the answer is no, we're going to fight like heck against it and let the people of Iowa know why. Beyond tax cuts, Iowa House Speaker Pat Grassley of New Hartford said lawmakers would look at improving public safety, making government more transparent and efficient, and reviewing standards of both lower and higher education in the state. House Democratic Leader Jennifer Confort of Windsor Heights appealed to Republicans to work with Democrats on policy to address the needs of Iowans rather than pass bills approved and drafted solely by Republicans. The lawmaking process is generally dominated by Republicans, who hold a large majority in both chambers of the legislature. Democrats are generally not involved in drafting and making changes to bills, even when they are passed in a bipartisan fashion. How about this year? The fact that Democrats introduce a bill doesn't mean it's a bad idea automatically out of the gate, Confort said. What matters most is that we build policies that Iowans will recognize and have better lives because of. We're here to serve Iowans. Lawmakers took a moment of silence and expressed their grief over the shooting at Perry High School last week. Grassley highlighted it as part of Republicans' commitment to improving public safety, while Democrats said the shooting shows the need for stronger gun control measures. Iowa school students in the Des Moines Metro walked out on Monday and held a protest at the Capitol to demand stronger gun laws. People choose Iowa because our state is viewed as safe, so when we see these senseless acts of violence in our own home state, in our own schools, it shakes us to the core, House Speaker Pat Grassley said. In Iowa, every parent should be able to send their kids to school and trust that they should return home safely. Grassley did not say new gun restrictions would be on the list of policy responses to the shooting. Instead, he said Republicans would invest in school security, prioritize school resource officers, bolster children's mental health, and teach resilience over victimhood. He connected the push for safety in schools to Republicans' efforts to prohibit books with sexual conduct from school libraries. Democrats also called for action in response to the shooting, including stricter gun control measures. There is no pain like the pain of losing a child, Yoakam said. In our grief, though, you must also ask tough questions and acknowledge hard truths. How Do We Tame Violence in Our Country? Violence That Touched East High School here in Des Moines less than 2 years ago, and now Perry. The truth is, we must address gun safety. We must find a solution to gun violence, Yoakum said. No child should go to school fearing for their lives, but today, millions do. Gun safety should not be a partisan issue. Protecting kids should not be a partisan issue. It's time for us senators to come together and to find real solutions. Whitver praised law enforcement officials and emergency responders who acted during the shooting. He appeared to indicate Senate Republicans will not be considering gun safety legislation. While we can't legislate away evil and get rid of all the bad things in this world, we will keep our thoughts and prayers with those in Perry as we move forward and put in place policies to make our state better and stronger, Whitver said. It is impossible to find words to appropriately convey the sorrow and the sympathy we have to the victims of the shooting, but the people of Perry should know that we share their grief and support them at this time. Speaking at a Republican breakfast reception before the session began, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said lawmakers would work with the community as it continues to heal from the tragedy. We continue every day to keep the families of the victims in the Perry community in our prayers, Reynolds said. We'll continue to work with the community to make sure that they have the whole government behind them as we work through this heartbreaking time in our state's history. Student activists with the March for Our Lives group rallied in the Capitol Rotunda and then marched to deliver a letter to Reynolds' office demanding the state pass gun safety measures. Their proposals include allowing law enforcement to temporarily take guns from individuals experiencing a mental health crisis, preventing gun ownership of an individual convicted of certain crimes like stalking, and requiring the reporting to law enforcement of any lost or stolen firearm. Our hearts are heavy today, and our prayers are with everyone in Perry. Still, nothing has been done, Trey Jackson, the legislative director of March of Our Lives, Iowa, said as he read the letter to Reynolds during the Capitol rally. Iowans have had enough of prayers. We need action. You, Governor Reynolds, have the power to create meaningful change. You have the power to save more lives from being senselessly stolen in this state. Grassley doubled down on House Republicans' efforts to remove books with sexual content from public schools and said Republicans may pass additional legislation to clarify or expand on the existing law. In December, a federal judge temporarily blocked much of a law passed last year, Senate File 496, that banned books that depicted or described any of a list of sex acts from public schools and prohibited teaching about gender identity and sexual orientation before seventh grade, among a host of other regulations. Grassley said he was shocked that we actually have people willing to fight this hard to keep pornographic material in our schools. The language of the law has led school districts to remove works of classic literature like Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five and George Orwell's 1984. Opponents of the law, including civil rights groups and legislative Democrats, say it's overly broad, impedes the First Amendment right of students and teachers, and discriminates against LGBTQ students. It should have been an easy policy for schools to implement, but instead some chose to politicize the issue, and if we need to pass additional legislation this session, we will, Grassley said. At the Republican breakfast reception, speaker after speaker touted delivering a conservative agenda that includes lowering taxes, providing taxpayer funding for families to pay for private school expenses, and strengthening parental involvement and steering away from progressive social issues in school curriculum related to instruction on gender identity and sexual orientation. I could not be more proud of the accomplishments that we've achieved since we were able to achieve the trifecta, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said at the event. You know, collectively, you truly are making a difference for Iowans, and the policies, and most importantly, the results have captured America's attention, from tax cuts to cutting government and red tape to growing the economy. We saw nearly $4 billion of capital investment in our state last year in 2023. From educational freedom to universal school choice to protecting life, this Republican team has delivered time and time again on the promises that we made to Iowans. Reynolds urged lawmakers to continue to challenge the status quo and continue to empower Iowans to really continue to maintain, I think, the bold and decisive leadership that Iowans have truly come to expect from our Republican leaders. We're excited about this next legislative session, she said. We got a great story to tell. We've got a lot to be proud of, and we do have more work to do. Next is a story entitled, He Was So Well-Loved and Loved Everyone. Amir Jalief was killed in the Perry School shooting. This is written by Nicholas Riccardi of the Associated Press, and the dateline is Des Moines. Amir Jalief dashed out of his home in Perry Thursday morning, eager to see his friends on the first day back to school after winter break. It was vintage Amir, known as Smiley around his house, an 11-year-old whirlwind of cheerful activity. He kept a trunk of toys unlocked in the front yard so anyone could play with them, his mother said. He loved soccer, played the tuba, and sang in choir. He had a habit of touching people on their shoulder and asking them how their day was. Amir was killed Thursday before class even started when a 17-year-old student at Perry High School opened fire in the cafeteria. The sixth grader who attended the middle school that's connected to the high school was shot 3 times, authorities said. 7 others, including the school's principal, 2 other staff members, and 4 students, were wounded before the shooter died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Amir's mother, Erica Jalief, said that on that morning, her son couldn't wait to get to school and left minutes ahead of his mom and sister, who is in 9th grade. Jalief soon found herself scouring the streets for her children when authorities sped into town and blocked access to the complex after the shooting. She found her daughter unharmed, but she couldn't find Amir. I just had a feeling he was still in that building, she said. Jalief said she was horrified to hear that friends of 17-year-old Dylan Butler, who police have identified as the shooter, say he was bullied for years and that teachers and school officials did nothing to protect him. We send our condolences to the family of Dylan. They're in our prayers, and we're truly sorry for his loss as well, she said in an interview late Friday with the Associated Press. On Saturday, a rock outside the school was repainted the school color bright blue in honor of Amir. The rock, which previously had been painted white, had already become a memorial site where people left teddy bears and flowers. The shooting happened just after 7:30 a.m. Thursday, shortly before classes were set to begin on the first day back after winter break. Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation spokesman Mitch Mortvedt told the AP the shooting started in the cafeteria, where students from several grades were eating breakfast, then spilled outside the cafeteria but was contained to the north end of the school. Authorities said Butler had a pump-action shotgun and a small-caliber handgun. Mortvedt said authorities also found a pretty rudimentary improvised explosive device in Butler's belongings, and it was rendered safe. 2 friends and their mother, who spoke with the AP, said Butler was a quiet person who had been bullied since elementary school. Investigators are still working to get a good grasp of who Dylan was, Mortvedt said. The investigation will include Butler's background along with the environment of the school, he said. Superintendent Clark Wicks wouldn't discuss whether Butler had been bullied, but he defended the way his district responds to those situations, saying, "We take every bullying situation seriously, and our goal is to always have that safe and inviting atmosphere." Perry has about 8,000 residents and is about 40 miles northwest of Des Moines, on the edge of the state's capital's metropolitan area. The high school is part of the 1,785-student Perry Community School District. Jalief remembered her son as a font of happiness and sociability who seemingly knew everyone in town and whose ample dimples were constantly lit up by a perpetual grin. He was so well-loved and he loved everyone, she said. He's such an outgoing person. Jalief said she didn't know anything about Butler's situation but had sympathy for him. Jalief says she hopes that administrators have learned the importance of checking on students to make sure they're okay. I just pray that what we lost isn't in vain and that other things can be put in place with the school system, Jalief said. Next up, Pleasant Valley students hold walkout. The walkout was to raise awareness of gun violence. This is written by Tom Lowy of the Quad City Times. The walkout was a small one, but its message was timely. At 10:40 a.m. Monday morning, 23 Pleasant Valley High School students walked out of school to the football stadium to remember the children and teenagers killed in gun violence. The memory is a fresh one throughout Iowa. In the small town of Perry, a 17-year-old high school student brought a shotgun and a handgun to school on January 4th and opened fire. He injured 7 people and killed an 11-year-old named Amir Jalief. Friends called the 6th grader Smiley. The students gathered on Pleasant Valley High School's football field were not permitted to speak with media, but Principal Mike Hawley said the students asked permission to leave class for the gathering. They showed us their agenda and what they wanted to do. They said they wanted to remember what happened recently in Perry and remember all of the students lost, Hawley said. And they said they wanted to educate their peers about gun violence. We are here to make sure they can gather safely to observe this moment. The walkout at Pleasant Valley was part of a wider statewide event sponsored by March for Our Lives, a national group founded in 2018 that seeks to encourage students to speak out against gun violence. According to March for Our Lives' Facebook page, 11 other high schools in Iowa held peaceful walkouts Monday. The group also held a protest at 1 p.m. Monday at Iowa State Capitol Building in Des Moines. In other weather-related news, Quad City Airport prepares for snow. Snowblowers can move snow about 200 feet away. It's written by Gretchen Teske of the Quad City Times. Winter weather is on its way, but the team at the Quad Cities International Airport have been ready for months. Beginning at the end of October and continuing through April, crews monitor weather radar to ensure the equipment they need is serviced, available, and ready to roll, said Airport Operations Manager Joe Getz. As soon as one event is done, we're returning equipment to service, he said. Once snow and ice appear on the radar, Getz's crew starts assembling spare parts, equipment, and brooms. Between the airfield maintenance and the equipment operators, there are about 18 people on the team. They have an additional 8 people on call seasonally, he said. Together, they use and maintain a fleet of 5 18-foot wide runway brooms, 2 9-foot wide snow blowers, 2 front end loaders with box blades, a road grader, 2 22-foot wide snow plows, a 100-foot liquid de-ice sprayer, 6 pickup trucks, and 5 tractors. Getz said the heavy-duty equipment is essential for keeping paths clear and getting the snow out of the way. Most residential-use snowblowers move snow a few feet, he said. At the airport, the snowblowers can move the snow about 6 driveways or 200 feet, Getz said. The maintenance at the airport is all part of the snow and ice control plan required by the FAA. Under that plan, we say any time we're expecting an accumulation of snow or ice, we start our snow removal efforts and continue those around the clock until those conditions no longer present a hazard to the airport, he said. With an event like Tuesday's, Getz estimated the plan will be in full effect from about 6 p.m. Monday evening until early Thursday morning. In addition to the runways, staff have to make sure the parking lots, sidewalks, and walking paths are cleared for guests. Relatedly, Quad City's websites and phone numbers to know ahead of winter weather, also written by Gretchen Teske. Winter weather is finally here. Below is a list of phone numbers and resources to help get you through the first snowstorm of 2024. City updates. Each city has its own alert system to keep residents informed about the conditions in their area. Scott County residents can sign up online at scottcountyiowa.gov/EMA/alert-Iowa for alerts to be sent to their phones. Rock Island County residents can do the same online at rockislandcountyil.gov/alertcenter.aspx. Road conditions. Interactive maps that show road conditions can be found online courtesy of the state's Department of Transportation. Illinois residents can look online at gettingaroundillinois.com and Iowa residents at iowadot.gov. The maps are updated periodically and color-coded to indicate the conditions. The map also indicates closures, blocked roads, and tow bans. Weather updates. The National Weather Service provides recorded updates for various regions, including the Quad Cities. After calling, the automated message will begin and read the most up-to-date information the center can provide. This service is available year-round and can be accessed by calling 563-386-3976. It is also available online at weather.gov. Mid-American Outage Map. With cold weather comes strong winds and, unfortunately, power outages. Mid-American keeps track of outages and the estimated time it will take to repair. The map can be found online at midamericanenergy.com/outagewatch and shows outages for the entirety of Mid-American's coverage area. The regions are color-coded to show how many people are affected. The map is updated periodically. To report an outage, call 800-799-4443. Mediacom. While Mediacom does not have an online outage map, the company does have a way to report a lack of internet access. Those with the app can simply log in and inform the company or text OUTAGE to 66554. Health and Safety. In a medical emergency, call 911. Genesis Emergency Department, area code 563-421-1000. Unity Point Emergency Department, area code 309-779-5000. The Genesis Health System in Davenport released a guide to staying safe in severe weather. Hypothermia. Overexposure to cold temperatures or cold water can be deadly. Warning signs include confusion or sleepiness, slowed and slurred speech, shallow breathing, a weak pulse or low blood pressure, a behavior change, severe shivering or no shivering, poor control over body movements or slow reactions. If hypothermia is suspected, get the victim into a warm room or shelter. Remove clothes from the victim if they are wet. Warm the center of the body first using an electric blanket if one is available. Use skin-to-skin contact under loose, dry layers of blankets, clothing, or towels. Give warm beverages. Get medical attention as soon as possible. If the victim is unconscious, CPR may be necessary. Frostbite. Initial signs are indicated by white or grayish-yellow area on the skin. Skin that feels unusually firm or waxy or numbness. If suspected, seek medical care immediately. If it is not available, get the person into a warm room as soon as possible. Do not walk or use frostbitten extremities. Immerse injured area in warm water. Warm injured area with body heat. Don't use a heating pad, heat lamp, or heat of a stove, fireplace, or radiator, because injured areas can be quickly burned. Carbon monoxide danger. Warning signs of exposure in low concentrations include fatigue in healthy people and chest pain in people with heart disease. At higher concentrations, symptoms include impaired vision and coordination, headaches, dizziness, confusion, and nausea. Flu-like symptoms that diminish with exposure to fresh air are a warning sign. Exposure to very high concentrations can be fatal. Public Works. The following Public Works departments, which handle municipal snow removal, can be reached at, for Bettendorf, area code 563-344-4055. For East Moline, area code 309-752-1574. For Davenport, area code 563-326-7923. In Moline, area code 309-524-2400. And Rock Island, area code 309 732-2200. Water companies, with freezing temperatures on their way, frozen pipes are a big concern. Iowa American Water suggests opening cabinets or ventilating doors where pipes are kept to keep them warm and allowing a trickle of water to run continuously. In the event pipes do freeze, Iowa American recommends shutting off the water supply and slowly warming the pipes with warm air from a hairdryer or space heater. To report problems or get assistance, reach out to the following entities: Iowa American Water at 866-641-2108, in Moline, area code 309-524-2300, and in Rock Island, 309-732-2380. Police and Fire Non-Emergency Lines. In the event of an emergency, call 911. For other non-emergency situations, individual departments can be reached at Bettendorf Police, area code 563-344-4015, Bettendorf Fire, 563-344-4052, Davenport Police, area code 563-326-7979, Davenport Fire, 563-326-7906, East Moline Police, 309-752-1555, East Moline Fire, 309-752-1505, Moline Police, 309-797-0401, Moline Fire, 309-524-2250, Rock Island Police, 309-732-2677, and Rock Island Fire, 309-732-2800. And public transportation. Snow routes are already in effect for those in Davenport who rely on the bus for public transport. A map of the various lines for the city bus can be found online at davenportiowa.com/services/citybus, CITIBUS_transit. And the department can be reached at area code 563-888-2151. For those everywhere else, Metrolink offers the same services. Separate maps for Illinois and Iowa can be found online at metroqc.com/101/maps-schedules. And the company can be reached at area code 309-788-3360. A reminder that you are listening to the Quad City Times on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, please give us a call at area code 515-243-6833. Now we'll move to the opinion page and we'll read an opinion from Kathleen Parker, who is a writer for the Washington Post, and it's entitled "The Rational Case for Backing Haley in Iowa and Beyond." Though it seems as if campaigning for the 2024 presidential election began right after the last one ended, the voting is only now beginning with Iowa Republicans' caucuses on January 15th. As usual, we'll learn that the caucuses are strange and chaotic. We'll be reminded that the winner might not become the GOP nominee. And it's on to New Hampshire on January 23rd and South Carolina's first in the South primary, February 24th. Most bets are on Donald Trump, despite fierce campaigning by his top challengers, former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who has visited all 99 Iowa counties and secured the governor's endorsement. DeSantis is seen as needing to score second place in Iowa to continue his bid, because Haley and Trump are polling ahead of him in New Hampshire. Countless are the reasons that Trump, who has declared himself the revenge candidate, should be swept into history's dustbin and left to spend its golden years as a professional defendant. If he continues to insist that the 2020 election was stolen from him, a noxious and provable lie, imagine what he'd do with the 2024 loss. In addition to risking a repeat of January 6, 2021, a Trump loss would leave us with the elderly Joe Biden in the presidency and the painful probability that he won't live to complete his second term. And the single strongest argument against Biden's re-election is Vice President Kamala Harris. I can't stress enough how irresponsible it would be to make a Harris presidency possible. Just listen to her speeches. Her rhetorical flourishes can be dumbfounding, as when she says, "When we talk about the children of the community, they are a children of the community." Then there's the laugh, maniacal and mystifying. What is she laughing at? Nothing funny, it so often seems. I'm sure the vice president is lovely in other contexts, but as president, she would frighten the world. Biden has different issues, never mind the verbal pratfalls. It's his physical ones that are most worrisome. Falling is the number one cause of fatal injuries in older people, and at times, it seems Biden is tilting too far for comfort. No one wants to hear personal criticism of our aged president, so we'll leave it at, "Go home, Joe." Biden was surely the better choice in 2020, far preferable to a guy accused of paying a porn star for sex and silence while his wife was taking care of an infant, a constitutional heathen who encouraged a siege of the U.S. Capitol by his supporters and believers in the big lie. Trump was impeached by the House of Representatives for inciting violence against the government of the United States. This glowering, pouty-frowned schlump belongs nowhere near the White House. Trump is an unfit candidate, full stop. Thus, we are left with Haley and DeSantis. My view is that Haley is far and above the best pick for the job of chief executive and commander-in-chief. Like DeSantis, she has been a governor of South Carolina, where she was popular enough to be re-elected. She left that job to become Trump's ambassador to the United Nations, where she was a natural. Articulate, knowledgeable, and a quick study, she entered and left the position as a polished pro. Critics point to Haley's ambition and strategically timed policy positions, such as the decision to remove the Confederate battle flag from the statehouse grounds following the murders of 9 African-American parishioners in a historic Charleston church. If it was the right thing to do, why didn't she do it before a racist lunatic mowed down innocent people in prayer? The answer is that politics is about compromises, adjustments, and unfolding circumstances. When South Carolina was ready to purge the flag, Haley was ready. DeSantis is plainly smart, too, a graduate of Harvard Law and Yale University, a JAG officer in the Navy. DeSantis was an advisor to a Navy SEAL commander and received a Bronze Star. But for all this, he seems a man unfamiliar with his own skin. He lacks what Haley has in abundance, charisma. In addition to her proven competence as an executive and her superior performance in debate after debate, she is also warm, approachable, and likable. A mother of two, she's the wife of a deployed military officer. Most impressive, she's a dark-skinned, second-generation Sikh American who grew up in Bamberg, South Carolina, with a population of 3,607, with a father who wore a dastar, Sikh turban. As someone who spent my childhood summers in nearby Barnwell, South Carolina, I can tell you, a person who can make it out of Bamberg to govern and perform on the world stage can do anything, including lead the United States. Do the right thing for your country, Iowa, and vote Haley. Now we'll move to the obituaries, and we remember Rose McCoy, age 76, of Grundy Center, who died late Saturday, January the 6th, 2024, at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics following a brief illness. A memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday, January 11th, at St. Joseph Catholic Church, DeWitt, the Reverend Father Stephen Page officiating. Interment will follow in the church cemetery. Arrangements are in the care of Schultz Funeral Home, DeWitt. Condolences may be expressed at www.schultzfuneralhomes.com. Next, we remember Virginia A. Hanford, age 85, of Davenport, who passed away on Saturday, January the 6th, 2024. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. on Thursday, January the 11th, 2024, at Wiertz Funeral Home. Visitation will be held from 12 p.m. until time of service. Burial will follow at Mount Calvary Cemetery, Davenport. Memorials may be left to the American Cancer Society or St. Jude Children's Hospital. Online condolences may be expressed at www.wiertzfh.com. Wiertz is spelled W-E-E-R-T-S-F-H.com. Next, we remember Dale A. Otto, age 83, formerly of Walcott, Iowa, now Bentendorf, passed away Monday, January the 8th, 2024, at Bentendorf Healthcare. Cremation rites will be accorded with a celebration of life to be held at a later date. Memorials may be made in his name to the Davenport Elks, and please share condolences at www.rungemortuary.com. And we remember Patricia J. Sheldahl, age 91, of West Liberty, Iowa, formerly Milan, Illinois, who passed away Sunday, January the 7th, 2024, at the Simpson Memorial Home in West Liberty, Iowa. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Thursday, January the 11th, 2024, at Our Redeemer Lutheran Church, West Liberty, Iowa. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Thursday at the church. Burial will be in Rock Island Memorial Park Cemetery. Whelan Presley Funeral Home and Crematory, Rock Island, is assisting with arrangements. Memorials may be made to St. Croix Hospice or Simpson Memorial Home, West Liberty. Online condolences and memories may be shared with Patricia's family by visiting www.whelanpresley.com. Now let's move on to sports. Our first article is entitled North's Borage Wins Bates MVP. It's written by Chim Johnston. Davenport North High School girls basketball player Divine Borage has added to her honors. On top of winning the game's most valuable player nod in Saturday's 68-46 victory over United Township High School in the finale of the Iowa vs. Illinois IHMVCU shootout, the North Junior picked up another honor Monday evening. Borage was named the shootout's Darrell Bates MVP, topping the 11 other individual game MVPs in balloting of tournament coaches and officials. The final tournament honor was announced Monday evening by tournament organizer Gary Tharp of Beyond the Baseline in Davenport. Bates, who passed away in 2009, was a longtime sports writer with the Quad City Times who covered prep action in the area. Borage scored a game-high 21 points and capped her double-double with a team-high 10 rebounds. She also dished out 5 assists. Borage was left almost speechless Saturday when trying to talk about the game MVP honors when she received a commemorative ball from tourney organizers to recognize her efforts. "I'm not used to getting this," she said. "Just being able to put a show on for the hometown and to play hard for my teammates was really, really fun." Borage is currently second among Class 5A players in the state with 219 points, just ahead of classmate and University of Iowa commit Journey Houston's 217. As much as the individual honors meant, Borage was just happy that her 10-win, 2-loss team kept playing solid ball in winning its 10th game in a row. "It's not rivalries, but we've always wanted to play against each other," said Borage of the importance of the annual shootout that has expanded to 12 games at 2 locations. "We just played team ball," said Borage of the Wildcats' latest effort. "It was really important." It was to Coach Paul Rucker as well. He was pleased with Borage's outing and first shootout honor, but also with the entire team. That included Houston's all-around play, 20 points, 8 rebounds, and the move of the tourney on a fast-break bucket that included a behind-the-back dribble at the free-throw line, and the effort from 5'10 senior forward Kyra Taylor. She added 12 points and also spent much of the game going up against UT's Lorena Awu, a 6'5" center heading to North Carolina State on a Division I scholarship, and she was also battling an illness. It was just a good team win, said Rucker. Along with Davenport Assumption's victory over a shorthanded Anawand team that capped the day's lineup at Wharton Fieldhouse, North's victory over UT cemented Iowa's bragging rights for the seventh straight shootout. Teams from Iowa won 7 of the 12 games. Next is a story entitled Furlong Named Geneseo Football Coach. Assumption Augie alum had been at Cary Grove. Matt Furlong has been named the new head football coach at Geneseo. Furlong had been defensive coordinator at Cary Grove High School, helping the Illinois school to state championships in 2018, 2021, and 2023. Furlong is very familiar with the Geneseo program in the Quad Cities area. He went to high school at Davenport Assumption and Augustana College, playing football and baseball at both schools. His father, John, was his assistant football coach at Augustana and the former head coach at St. Ambrose. All of our family is living in the area, so we've had a desire to move back, the 42-year-old Furlong said. When the Geneseo role opened up between the football program, the community, and the schools, it just made sense from both a family and professional perspective. Furlong will also teach history and driver education at Geneseo. Furlong arrived at Cary Grove in 2005. He was promoted to the varsity level in 2018 when he became defensive coordinator. During his time at Cary Grove, they won state championships in 2009, 2018, 2021, and 2023. Matt is an outstanding coach and teacher who has been integral to the success of our program for the last 20 years, said Cary Grove head coach Brad Seberg. He is innovative, creative, and relentless in his preparation from week to week. No one prepares more than Coach Furlong, and our defenses showed just that. Geneseo Athletic Director Joe Nichols said Furlong is a great fit to lead the Maple Leafs. The main thing we were looking for was someone who can get players to a place they can't get to themselves, explained Nichols. To me, that's what defines a great coach, someone who can get more out of players than the players can on their own. Matt is absolutely capable of doing that. Furlong comes to Geneseo with his wife Monica, stepdaughter Mackenzie, and son Bryant. He replaces Larry Johnson, Jr., who stepped down as head coach in November after 20 seasons. We're walking into a situation where there is already a great foundation on so many levels, acknowledges Furlong. My challenge is to continue honoring the traditions while building on what's been created, from the football program to the school to the community. We're looking forward to being in a family-oriented place that really values community. Freeman named Big Ten's top freshman again. Moline High grad earns honor for fifth time. This is written by Dave Selvig of the Quad City Times. Owen Freeman's stellar freshman season continues for the Iowa Hawkeyes. The Moline High School product was named the Big Ten's Freshman of the Week for the fifth time on Monday, adding to his school record total for the award. Freeman leads all Big Ten freshmen in points, rebounds, and blocks this season. He ranks second in steals and field goal percentage. Last week, Freeman averaged 14.5 points, 8.5 rebounds, and 2.5 blocks as Iowa split against Wisconsin and Rutgers. In the two games, Freeman made 75% of his shots. Against the 21st-ranked Badgers, Freeman registered 14 points and 13 rebounds for his second career double-double. Freeman played a career-high 37 minutes in the game. Against Rutgers, Freeman finished with 14 points on 7 of 9 shooting, plus 8 rebounds. Freeman is the first Iowa freshman since Luca Garza in 2017-2018 to have multiple double-doubles in the same season. Overall, the 6'10", 230-pounder is averaging 10.3 points per game on 63.3% shooting. He's second on the team in rebounding and has 30 of the Iowa's 63 blocked shots. The Hawkeyes return to action on Friday, hosting Nebraska at 8:30 p.m. Here's a rundown of the sports that are available on television today in Iowa, in college men's basketball at 5:30. Seton Hall is at Georgetown. At 6 p.m., Wake Forest is at Kent State on CBSSN. Also at 6 p.m., it's Missouri at Kentucky on ESPN, and Houston at Iowa State at 6 p.m. on ESPN2. At 6 p.m. on ESPNU, it's Yale at Brown. At 6 p.m., South Carolina at Alabama on SEC Network. At 8 p.m., Notre Dame at Georgia Tech on the ACC Network. Also at 8 p.m., it's Creighton at DePaul on CBS Sports Network. Texas A&M at Auburn at 8 p.m. on ESPN2. And Vanderbilt at LSU at 8 p.m. on SEC Network. At 9:30 p.m., it's New Mexico at UNLV on FS1. And at 10 p.m., San Diego State at San Jose State on CBS Sports Network. In college women's basketball, at 5 p.m., it's Maryland at Michigan State on the Big Ten Network. At 7 p.m., it's Minnesota at Wisconsin on the Big Ten Network. And at 7:30 p.m., you can catch Marquette at Seton Hall on FS1. In NBA action, at 7:30 p.m., it's Memphis at Dallas on NBA TV. In hockey, at 7:30 p.m., it's Edmonton at Chicago on the NBC Sports Channel. In sports briefs, storm causes early deadline. Due to the forecasted winter storm, the Muscatine Journal had an early deadline on Monday. Scores and results from Monday's games can be found at qctimes.com or qconline.com. Damask earns Big Ten weekly honor. Marcus Damask from Illinois has been named the Big Ten's Player of the Week. The graduate senior from Waupun, Wisconsin, averaged 29 points, 5.5 assists, and 4 rebounds as the Illini went 1-1 last week, beating Northwestern and falling to number 1 Purdue on the road. Damask had 32 points against the Wildcats and 26 against the Boilermakers. In the two games, Damask shot 59.4% from the field and 66.7% on three-pointers and 90% from the free-throw line. For the season, Damask's averages 14.1 points, 4.5 rebounds, and 4.1 assists for the 10th-ranked Illini, who host Michigan State Thursday at 8 p.m. Keokuk football coach steps down. Josh Roberts has resigned as the head football coach at Keokuk High School. Roberts recently moved to a family farm in Carthage, causing him to step away from coaching, which he said was one of the toughest decisions I've had to make. It has been an honor and more rewarding than I have ever expected, Roberts said of his 7 seasons on the Keokuk staff. In 5 seasons as head coach, Roberts led Keokuk to a record of 18 wins and 22 losses. I would like to personally thank Coach Roberts for turning this program around and for the countless hours he has poured into this position, said Keokuk Activities Director Zach Summers. And former Monmouth coach Reichow dies. Bill Reichow, one of the winningest Monmouth College coaches of all time in 3 sports, has died. He was 94 years old. Reichow led the men's golf team to 4 Midwest Conference titles and coached the Fighting Scots wrestling team to new heights. Reichow may be best known for his accomplishments on the gridiron, coaching the Fighting Scots for a decade in football, including the only unbeaten team in school history, 9 wins and 0 losses in 1972. Reichow was inducted into the college's M Club Hall of Fame in 1993. Reichow played quarterback and offensive line for the Iowa Hawkeyes. From Albia, Iowa, he was a paratrooper for 3 years during the Korean War. In women's college basketball, Iowa moves up to number 3 in the AP Top 25 poll. South Carolina, UCLA, and Baylor remain undefeated. South Carolina remained number 1 in the Associated Press Top 25 women's basketball poll and is now one of 3 unbeaten teams left. The new year began with 7 undefeated teams, but only South Carolina, number 2 UCLA, and number 4 Baylor remain. The Gamecocks received 34 of the 35 first-place ballots Monday after beating Florida and Mississippi State last week. UCLA garnered the other number 1 vote and was 2nd in the top 25 once again. Iowa moved up to 3rd after previously unbeaten North Carolina State lost in the last 2nd to Virginia Tech. The Wolfpack fell to 6th. Baylor jumped up 2 spots after topping previously undefeated TCU and Houston. Colorado was fifth. LSU, which won at Mississippi on Sunday in front of a program record crowd of 9,074 for the Rebels, was number seven behind NC State and Stanford. USC and Texas rounded out the top 10. Virginia moved up two spots to 11th, leapfrogging Kansas State and UConn. The Hokies' two losses this season have come to Iowa on a neutral court and at LSU. After wins over Syracuse and Notre Dame, North Carolina re-entered the top 25 1 week after dropping out. The Tar Heels, who were the only team to beat two ranked opponents last week, came in at number 20. UNLV also returned to the poll at number 25. Syracuse and TCU fell out. The Horned Frogs also lost star Sedona Prince indefinitely to a hand injury. TCU had won its first 14 games, the best start in school history, before losing to Baylor. West Virginia and Oregon State were the other two undefeated teams heading into 2024. The 24th-ranked Mountaineers fell to Texas last week, and the Beavers were swept by USC and UCLA. Number 18 Notre Dame got a lift from the return of Sonya Citron from a 9-game absence due to a knee injury. She had 18 points in a loss to North Carolina on Sunday. Notre Dame is still without guard Olivia Miles, who tore her ACL last season. That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Quad City Times for Tuesday, January the 9th, 2024. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.